Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
I was organizing the thing, so we collected with Facebook in the home city. And within a few hours, over 100 people came over and gave us a lot of food, a lot of clothes, and also a little bit of donations. And with this money, we can be here. Like, we're not getting paid, we just use it for the fuel. It's volunteering.
Volunteers in neighboring Poland help victims of the ongoing Russian aggression in Ukraine.
He came here to denounce his visit to Russia that happened on February 27. During that visit, he pledged to Russians that they will have a military base in Sudan.
Dozens of Sudanese Americans denounce Russian aggression in Ukraine and its involvement in Sudan.
Again, there are still issues with stigma and discrimination, but thanks to the cooperation between the embassy and the government, it's now reasonably safe for key populations to access high-quality services in an environment in which they're comfortable.
And a five-day training in HIV/AIDS for health workers ends in the Sierra Leonean capital, Freetown. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. An art school where about 400 people had found shelter in Ukraine's besieged port city of Mariupol has been bombed by Russian forces. Mariupol City Council said Sunday that the building was destroyed in the attack. Information about survivors was not immediately available. The city council said on Saturday that residents of Mariupol have been forcibly taken from their homes. VOA's Mary Mgawe is on a special assignment in Poland near the border with Ukraine. She went to the Kochova and Przemyśl refugee camps and spoke with some of the volunteers who are helping victims displaced by the ongoing conflict.
We offer here coffee and tea and some donates which have been made by our friends. So we ask in our friends, or we tell our friends we are going to drive here and we want to help, and would you please give us some goods? And yeah, all these stuff you see here, all these goods are donations from our friends or from people which are living in our hometown.
I was organizing the thing, so we collected with Facebook in the home city. And within a few hours, over 100 people came over and gave us a lot of food, a lot of clothes, and also a little bit of donations. And with this money, we can be here. Like, we're not getting paid, we just use it for the fuel. It's volunteering. But it's nice because we have so much at home. So, and we just have it because we took so much from Africa, we took so much from all the colonized countries. So we have to give something back.
In my opinion, I don't understand how you can support someone who is making war. Someone who is shooting at small child or at women. I really don't understand.
Yeah, make peace. It's
make
easy.
Peace. Yeah, make peace.
Yeah, please no war. It's not in our hands, it's in their hands. So we just can tell them to hopefully do it.
Come with any organization. We just came as a family. We just wanted to come and help out any way we can. My family speaks Russian, and so we felt like we were like uniquely qualified to come because we can translate. Yesterday, I was with a older woman, and she was completely lost down in the metro. She didn't know where to go. She lost her family. I was with her for hours. She was just crying to me, telling me I can't find them. I don't know where they are. Our phones got stolen, and I felt helpless. Like, I couldn't help her. I looked for the family. I couldn't find them. Another woman that I met yesterday that I was with for a couple hours, her kids were still in Ukraine, and she was on the other side because she had come here earlier before everything happened. And so her kids were stuck in Ukraine, and she was trying to desperately to find a ride over there to get her kids, 16-year-old and 18-year-old, and she couldn't figure out a way. And she was just crying to me, telling me I need to be with my family. I'm lost without them. So that was pretty tragic to hear.
How does it feel the very first day?
It's feel horrible, because one crazy guy came to my home and destroyed everything. Destroy somebody's houses and destroy somebody's life, you know? It's a horrible feeling. We used from house to Ukrainian border a car. After that, we just walk, and we took a bus, and he bring us here. We will not stay here. We're just waiting for our train, and we are going to go to Sweden. To Sweden, to my friends. They call me when war began, the war in Ukraine. They call me and told me, please come to us. I told the first week, the second week, no, I don't want. I want to stay here. I want to help. But after the bomb near our house, we decided to leave because I worry about their lives, you know. I don't think about my life, about myself. I have a kid, so I have to think about them, how to protect them, you know.
Did you leave anybody behind?
My husband is in Ukraine. He stay in Ukraine, protect his country.
We knew about the situation going on in Ukraine and that there was need at the border, but we weren't sure what we would be doing. And so we just decided to try and come down. World Central Kitchen is an unbelievable organization. They've resourced local people and local restaurants that are doing a lot of the work themselves. And so a lot of the economic impact is coming back into this city. And then they also have their own volunteers and organization that is also doing some of that work. And there's a big warehouse that I worked at this morning where they were making this applesauce and they were chopping fruit and vegetables, and it's just massive. We went to the border this morning and they're coming across on foot. And then when we come here, they show up in buses or they show up on the train and they're all trying to get to other places. And it just seems like it's nonstop all day long, every day.
That was viewers Miriam Garway speaking with volunteers at the Kochova and Premyshl refugee camps near the Poland-Ukraine border. Dozens of Sudanese Americans gathered outside the Russian embassy in Washington, D.C. Saturday to denounce Russian aggression in Ukraine and its involvement in Sudan. Protesters condemned a recent visit by Deputy Head of Sudan's Sovereign Council, General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, to Moscow, a potential deal to build a Russian naval base in the Northeast African nation, and reports of the smuggling of Sudanese gold by the Russian paramilitary Wagner Group. Nabil Biagio attended the rally and spoke to participants, which include Sudanese, Russian, and Ukrainian nationals.
Osaiko Brian, and I came from Maryland, and we are here because we opposed to the deal between Hamiti and Putin, and we need to stop all wars in the world, and especially the to get our sovereign country back.
I'm from Moscow, so I have been living in Moscow 11 years, and I'm against this war because it's disgusting when in this century died so many people, children and women, so, and from both sides. And I know that every Russian has relatives from Ukraine, many friends from there, so both nations are very close, you know, and it's impossible when one brother kills another brother, you know. So that's why I'm here today. My name is Tatiana Stjabina.
I'm originally from Ukraine. The Ukrainian name is Yevgeny, and I have been in the United States for a long time, immigrated a long time ago, and I'm here because my friends, dear friends, my city where I was born, raised, educated, married, is bombed right now. The school where my son went to is rubble. The hospital where my wife gave birth to my kids is being attacked by rockets. The place where I work, the thermal plant station, I worked for more than 10 years when I was there, already was bombed as well. So my friends, my Ukrainian friends, the families are struggling right now. It's a blood, and it's strictly on Putin. It's really not Russian people per se, but it's a Putin and those who are close to him. And I really want to show it's not enough just to donate money, which we already did. We need to really prove and let everybody know that we are with Ukraine. So that's the most important right now.
My name is Assam. I'm from New York City. I came this morning around 6 o'clock to demonstrate with my fellow Sudanese American here. Demonstrate in front of the Russian embassy. Again, it's a visit of MLT. He's one of the militia, the Janjaweed leader who's ruling Sudan right now. We came here to denounce his visit to Russia that happened on February 27. During that visit, he pledged to Russians that they will have a military base in Sudan, one of our shores. He also smuggled a lot of gold to them, and he also told our representative in the United Nations not to side with Ukraine and to abstain from voting. And Sudan is the first time abstain from denouncing the invasion to any from one country to another. This is because of the militia and the army that ruled Sudan at this time. We came here to denounce Putin, affiliation with the Janjaweed and our military coup government that rules Sudan right now. That's why we're here today.
My name is Dr. Salah Hazen. I came from Burkina. I have been this area for the last over 10 or 15 years. And I came here just to voice my concern of what is going on in Sudan regarding the latest visit of Hemeti to Russia, whereby he is smuggling a lot of gold so that Putin could sustain the expected sanctions in his plans to conquer.
That was Nabil Biagi reporting on the protests at the Russian embassy in Washington, D.C. In Sierra Leone, a 5-day training in HIV/AIDS for health workers has ended in the capital, Freetown. The U.S. top envoy to the West African country, Ambassador David Raymer, delivered the closing remarks. This, as experts say, this year's expansion of the U.S. President Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, or PEPFAR, is significantly improving access to treatment for Sierra Leoneans living with HIV. More than 22% of citizens with HIV are in treatment, with the PEPFAR program providing support for 15 new facilities across 4 districts. For details about the training for the health workers and the impact on the effort to combat the disease in Sierra Leone, I reach Ambassador David Raymer via Skype in the Sierra Leonean capital, Freetown.
As you mentioned, we just completed a training session where we were able to train over 200 staff from 15 new sites and give them sort of the latest technological innovations and advancements, on top of training 81 staff here in Freetown from 8 sites around Freetown. So this is part of our effort. We're growing and expanding the PEPFAR program in Sierra Leone. Last year we were at about $5 million, and this year we're going to just about double it to about $9 million.
So, Ambassador, how important did the participant feel about the program, and how was their reaction going through the education process?
Certainly. So I was there for the last day of the training session, and it was really remarkable, the enthusiasm from the participants. They seemed to be really interested in everything the instructors were saying, and I saw them taking copious notes, as I was as well, because it was interesting training.
So what do you think is the anticipated impact of the training?
I think in the long term, the impact of the training is going to be tremendous. Sierra Leone has the goal of by 2030 to be, I think the word is, would reach the goal of, it's like 95, 95, 95. And so that by 2030, 95% of the people in Sierra Leone who have HIV would be aware of their status. 95% of those would be getting treatment, and 95% of those people would have reached viral suppression. So that's the long-term goal. And speaking with the experts and with the governor of Sierra Leone, I think everybody agrees that that goal is attainable.
So will this program continue?
Yeah, we anticipate that the program is going to continue. We've seen a lot of success so far. I mentioned the 95, 95, 95 within this past year. And again, this is only the second year that we've done the program. On the first 95, we had a 23% increase in order to get to 71%. So 71% of Sierra Leoneans living with HIV know of their status. So that was a big improvement after just 1 year in the program. We saw a similar increase during the second 95, where it increased 22% up to 68%, meaning that 68% of those in Sierra Leone who know their status are under treatment. And so both of those results were very, very encouraging and leads us to believe that the program is going to be successful in the long term.
What should be the expectations of Sierra Leoneans following this training?
So, Peter, in terms of what folks can expect, I think that the people who undertook the training can expect to have greater enhanced skills and capacity and ability to deal with patients who have HIV/AIDS. And I think for the population as a whole, they can expect to have much better access to treatment, and once they have the treatment, to have better health outcomes.
It looks like this training dovetails into the government policy of the 95, 95, 95. So how is the cooperation between the administration in Freetown and the embassy in pushing this policy forward?
We have excellent cooperation with the government on this. The governor of Sierra Leone continues to embrace these innovations, add them to policies and guidelines. Again, there are still issues with stigma and discrimination, but thanks to the cooperation between the embassy and the government, it's now reasonably safe for key populations to access high-quality services in an environment in which they're comfortable.
Ambassador David Raymer is the top U.S. envoy to Sierra Leone. He spoke with me from the Sierra Leonean capital, Freetown. In Zambia, Savenda Management Services Limited, also known as Savenda Group, has emerged over the last two decades as a premier African procurement and logistics solutions company with a global reach. Clever Mpoha, the group CEO of Savenda, says as a global supply chain management company, significant synergies exist in the organization due to a network of associations in the U.S., Middle East, Africa, European Union, and in the Asian Pacific region. Savenda, he says, has a contract to supply, repair, and maintain all power generator sets in Zambia for two communications companies, Zain and MTN. The company also works with embroidery, screen printing, silk, car branding, billboard, CD, DVD printing, and office stationery. From humble beginnings in Zambia, Mpoha turned $1,000 into more than $300 million while creating over 1,000 jobs for Africans and others directly or indirectly. To learn more about how he did it, the prospects of Savenda Management Services, and what African youth can learn from him, I reach Mr. Clever Mpoha in the Zambian capital, Lusaka.
I decided that only choose to, after my education, of course, decided to work for international companies so I could learn what they do, how they do their business. So I worked for a company, Caterpillar, which gave me an insight of how they do their business. In 1997, I decided where I was going to incorporating our business.
Now, before 1997, what was the motivation behind your decision to say, okay, I want to branch out on my own and establish my own business?
So with $1,000 back in 1997, there was just the beginning of mobile phones.
Right.
There was a fear that phones would create magnetic waves and you may lose your brain or you may lose your family because they generate so much heat. So because of that, we discovered electromagnetic shields, which were being made in South Korea. And through our friends, we imported. One shield was small, tiny little things were costing $1. And you stick it to your phone on the earpiece and on behind the antenna. So with a $1,000, we made our first $10,000 after selling $1,000. And then with $10,000, we decided to order another set of $2,000. So $2,000 became now $20,000. And with the 20 plus our balance, we had enough money to venture suppliers in the mining companies.
Right. So let me ask you, when you decided to do this, when did it occur to you that perhaps I should extend myself to other parts of the continent and then perhaps diversify my investment, to become a conglomerate?
We said our company was going to be Savenda, which meant save nations to develop Africa. So from the onset in 1997, we had a Pan-African approach. And we said, look, African solutions will not come from anywhere. It will come from ourselves.
Talking about African solutions to solving African problems, doing business internationally that you have been doing, how is it that cooperation between business people like you and perhaps the West that you think can help in jumpstarting and helping Africans to solve intrinsic Africa problems for prosperity on the continent?
The Africa of today is different from the olden days, so it's educated from the West, so meaning they understand the culture of the West. But together now with the West, we can do much, much better because we can we understand the solutions that the needs for Africa is that if we develop the businesses here in Africa, both in all areas, Africans don't need to travel the world. They will develop here. And we wanted to be an example. I just give you one thing we are doing now. We opened our own big farms because, and then from those farms you can produce from actual agriculture and integrating all the small producers to integrate their produce into one environment which will help them to be able to sell their products to meet all the standards required for the global market. But then the technology will come from the West, tracing technologies, blockchain technologies. And we are friends of the West. So as friends of the West, we believe that they will bring their capital, they will bring their know-how, but we will bring all our skills. Hard work is already in our blood, so it's not something we can even debate about. We used to work very hard. So now working with a tractor, for example, working with mechanization, we feel it's like the simplest thing one can do. Because you worked with your hands, now you're working with machines.
Right.
So production can be done, so industries can come from not exporting the actual grain. We can produce and process and export. And besides, you know, Africa, we are still doing a lot of organic, organic production. So when people come, for example, they look for avocados, and these avocados which fall on almost every house, they're falling in their yard. They don't think it's something. But now, with the knowledge and the training that most of Africans have gotten from the West, they understand now how we can incorporate this and make even those in diasporas, Africans who are still out there, we want them back here to bring their knowledge. And working with the West is the best for us. That we have seen the technology and growth, So we want Africa to migrate from being developing to developed.
Clever Mpoha is the group CEO of Savenda Group of Companies. He spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. It's the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, and music from our African collection. But first, in Ghana, a religious NGO is providing free healthcare delivery services to deprived communities in parts of the West African country. With its headquarters in Yendi, northern Ghana, Global Mission Resource Center was established by Reverend Emmanuel Mustafa as part of his missionary work. Pastor Mustafa partners with organizations in the U.S. and invites U.S. doctors, nurses, and other health professionals to Ghana to provide free medical services to deprived communities. Mustafa says his organization has partnered with a regional hospital in Yendi to help provide health care to northern Ghana. Serving over 250,000 people, the hospital and its staff are stretched thin, usually operating beyond their capacity. To learn more about the free healthcare delivery and other philanthropic work Global Mission Resource Center does for poor communities in Ghana, I reached the organization's CEO and founder, Reverend Emmanuel Mustafa, via Skype.
Global Missions Resource Center was born out of my 30 years mission experience, and I felt that I need to go a little bit deeper to be able to help the communities that God has called me. So I set it to do church planting, training leaders, support infrastructure-wise, and also identify a viable project in the communities that I work and support that community. So basically, we do these four things as a Global Mission Resource Center.
I understand that you provide free health care needs for people in the community. Talk to me about this free healthcare project as part of your mission.
You see, if for every community to be able to develop and receive what it needs to be, you know, education is a number one. I felt that much need to be done. And I jumped into research to see how we can improve health delivery in the Yendi Hospital. So I connected with my partners in the United States, in Missouri, whom I invited them to come. And now it has turned a big show by Mission 318 and Global Mission Resource Center, partnering with the Yendi Municipal Hospital and doing free surgeries, supporting them with medical equipment every year. And to the standard, we build an ICU in Yendi that from there, we can connect a doctor from St. Louis, Missouri to assist a patient in Yendi through the telemedicine. And now we are building emergency and a trauma center, which is almost at the completion.
So how are you able to bring some of the doctors or health experts to help some of these needy residents in Yendi?
Well, you see, as a missionary, I use the connection that I have in the United States here, share the vision with them. So what we did was 2008, my pastor friend in the United States here, who has a church in Missouri, connected with the Mercy Hospital in Washington, Missouri, brought some doctors and nurses, and we did outreach in the villages, which we saw about 2,000 people in just 4 days. And when they came back, they brought the story back to the Mercy, and then Jonathan Limpet and his wife, who are surgeons, decided to come. And when they came, we connected with the Yendi Hospital, and they did, in 4 days, they did 100 procedures. And from then, they decided that, no, I think this is a very needy place. We need to do more. And it has become a yearly thing. Now they come twice a year to help us in Yendi. So that is how the whole thing started.
How are you able to fund it? Because it's going to be expensive bringing people from the United States to, especially in Yendi, where the weather conditions might not necessarily be favorable. And then with all these health needs, how are you able to fund this project?
You know, when there is a will, there is a way. Number one, these doctors and nurses come on their own expense as volunteers. So the forming of the team, anybody who comes, pay for their effort, their accommodation, and their food. So they are willing to spend to come and help our people. Then we also raise funds in the major projects like building the ICU, supplying medical equipment to the hospital. These are done through fundraisings, contacting and connecting people on board of it. So the baseline here is every doctor or nurse who come pay their way to come and serve us. It's amazing.
So for those who will be listening to you and watching you, what is your message to them?
My message is that the need is bigger. We need to identify areas that we can make more impact and seriously invite people to come in. And Mission 318 still inviting people to be able to support us and help us to accomplish this need that we have. And you know, recently we were privileged in the visit of the U.S. ambassador in the Northern region. She visited to see our project with firsthand to experience what we're doing there.
Reverend Emmanuel Mustafa is the CEO and founder of Global Mission Resource Center. He spoke with me from Texas here in the U.S. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. As Russia's military campaign in Ukraine intensified with resulting massive civilian casualties and infrastructural damage, many Western countries are criticizing those African states that have remained neutral. Ambassador Greenfield of the United States has been most articulate in stating that Putin's unprovoked aggression on Ukraine leaves no place for neutrality. They believe that this is the time for all states globally to roundly condemn Russia. When the Security Council first held its meeting on the war in Ukraine, the representatives of Kenya made a pertinent statement reflecting some of Africans' consideration. He ended by criticizing Soviet Russia's action in Ukraine. That statement was widely circulated in the Western world, but there were other pushback in Africa by those who believe that Africa should not condemn anyone. This position is grounded on what Africans have taken as non-aligned states. But above all, many African states are bewildered that European countries or the Western countries have failed to empathize or to understand their quandary and hesitancy in condemning Russia. In their shared colonial and recent history, as well as their historical grievances about the present imbalances in the world order system made them hesitant to criticize. Remember that the African states, along with their colleagues in the global south, have often criticized the use and misuse of the veto power in the Security Council. They have also noted frequently that the Charter of the United Nations is often honored in the breach than in the observance by all and sundry. That is why, for 26 years, African states and others have been calling for the reform of the Security Council, particularly in the permanent membership. They have gone unanswered. That is why also the African states and the Global South have called for a reform of the economic structure that was established at the end of the Second World War, the Bretton Woods institutions, that there should be reform. Again, since that time, nothing has been done to reform the Bretton Woods system. These are the concerns that make Africans so hesitant. But we should not exaggerate. No African state, except Eritrea, which in the eyes of the West is a pariah, has come out in support fully the action of Russia in Ukraine. What they would like to see is that others show as much concern when such events occur on the African continent. Africans know about recent past of foreign intervention on African territory and the MEM. They have gone through real wars of thousands, if not millions, of civilian deaths. But these were always well below the radar of the international community. Not like the 24 hours, 7 days a week penetration of the war in Ukraine. So one should wait and see how this war ends. And when it does, it may be necessary for the African states, along with those in the Global South, to have negotiations or discussion of reappraisal, an agonizing reappraisal of their relationship on the lines of the preceding consideration. Recently, a speaker said that in the present circumstances, nation states should act in the national interest if they have any common sense left. I thank you.
Skin girl, your skin just like pearls, the best thing in the world.
And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
Like pearls, the best thing in the world.
I never cheered you for anybody else singing.
She says she really grew up poor like me. Don't believe in nothing but the Almighty. Just a little jeans and a pure whitey. She never dream forever be nobody wifey. Yeah. She wanna make a pretty but your heart is a mess. Play you like a villain cause she caught in a way. Tonight I am walking away. 9 to 5 mind and I grind. Yeah. Tonight I might fall in love. Depending on how you hold me. I'm glad that I'm calming down. Can't let no one come control me. Keep dancing and call it love. She fights it by falling slowly. If ever you are in doubt, remember what mama told me. Brown skin girl, your skin just like pearls. Your back against the world. I never tried you for anybody else. A brown skin girl, your skin just like pearls. The best thing in all the world. I never tried you for anybody else.
Like a trophy when Naomi's walking. She need an Oscar for that pretty dark skin. Pretty like Lupita when the camera's closing. Drip broke the levy when my killer's rolling. I think tonight she might pray her brave. Melanin too dark to throw her shade. She minds her business and winds her ways. Roll like 24K. Okay.
Tonight I might fall in love. Depending on how you hold me. I'm glad that I'm calming down. Let no one come control me. Keep dancing and call it love. She fighting but falling slowly. If ever you are in doubt, remember what mama told me. Brown skin girl, your skin just like pearls. Your back against the world. I never tried you for anybody else. A brown skin girl, your skin just like pearls. The best thing about the world.
Oh, have you looked in the mirror lately? Wish you could trade eyes with me.
Because
there's complexities and complexities. complexion, but your skin is glow like diamonds. Dig me like the earth, you be giving birth to everything alive, they know your worth. I love everything about you, from your nappy curls to every single curve, your body natural. Same skin that was broken, me the same skin taking over. Most things out of focus, few, but when you're in the room, they know.
Are the words of my mother. As I'm getting old, even that way I remember. So I'm packing all my tools, I'm going back at home. A young girl like me shouldn't be caught with an old school fool. He told me he was a banker, not knowing bank robber. This man is a gangster, bukum bankum boxer. Oh sorry I no pa, but I'm bobo dambo. It drew where we are. Can it gun down cold? Now it beats me every night and day. My mission is to want me, but I didn't wanna know. My mission, my mission, my mission, my mission, my mission, my mission. I grind all day, me. Now picking up the here, mama. Picking up the here, papa. And then quada yaba. Social media nada. But then I have bob, papa. Better na ye nyondo pa. Nansi wakoda na wudiye umu kote ni ya usi ya bo. He told me he was a banker, no knowing bank robber. This man is a gangster, bukum bankum boxer. I'm sorry I no pa, but I'm bobo dambo. E drew here we are, shaka ni ganja mpo. Now he dey beat me, every night and day. My mission is to want me. Are the words of my mother. As I'm getting old, even now I remember. So I'm packing all my tools, I'm going back at home. A young girl like me shouldn't be caught with an old school fool. He told me he was a banker, not knowing bank robber. This man is a gangster, bukum bankum boxer. Now he dey beat me every night and day. My mission is to warn me, but I didn't wanna know. My mission, my mission, my mission, my mission, my mission, my mission.
Arigato!
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, Managing Editor William Eagle and Producer Saida Hamdoun, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, when the door is closed, you must learn to slide across the crack of the seal. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.